Hi, everyone. It's good to be here. My name is Eric Moller, and I work in the core graphics department at the browser vendor Opera Software. More specifically, I'm working on the our WebGL implementation, and I take a special interest in anything that has to do with games in browsers. You know, and the title of my talk today is "Building Great Games in HTML5." You know, just before I got here. Just before I got on the plane from GDC, I had lunch at a Chinese restaurant, and when I cracked open the fortune cookie and pulled out that little strip of paper, it actually said, "People will be waiting for your cues." I don't know if that means I'm going to have a blackout on stage and you guys are going to be waiting for me, but I hope not. So anyways, if I do, I'm definitely going to the casino, and I'm going to gamble on 3, 9, and 24, which are my lucky numbers according to that fortune cookie. So anyway, let's get started with the slides. And I always zone out the moment that the speakers start talking about, you know, how great their company is and why you should buy their products. So I'm going to keep this to a bare minimum. You know, keep your cell phones holstered, and we'll rip this marketing band-aid off quickly. So, Opera Software has over 700 employees. We do the main development in Norway, Sweden, where I am based, and in Poland. It's actually not as a well-known brand. Even though we've been around for 18 years, you know, and the browser has been around for 18 years. And we actually have a 25% market share on mobile. And we score the highest on the HTML5 test of all the mobile browsers. And we actually even beat some of the desktop browsers on that test. So we've got a really great mobile product. We have a large market share on TV. There's no hard data on the market shares yet. So all we know is that we have a significant market share on the TV browsers. And we have, even though, you know, globally we only have a 2% market share on desktop, in some regions we actually have up to a 50% market share. So I guess that's the reason that, you know, the brand isn't as well known. You know, our user base is mainly in Eastern Europe and Asia, and people care about what happens in California and maybe Texas. So this is a slide I show when I talk to my game developer peers. You know, you have to compare the Opera user base to something they know. And World of Warcraft, everyone knows about that. Or, you know, Twitter, we can do that. So we have a lot of users. So that was the marketing band-aid. So let's talk about JavaScript for a while. So my peers in the games industry, like, sorry, I've been in the games industry for 15 years, writing games for, you know, consoles and PC, writing in C++ and assembly most of the time. And my peers and myself didn't think much of JavaScript a couple of years ago. You know, it was just a toy language that you did some web stuff with, and not something you would consider writing games in. But actually, I think that's changing, and it's getting a bit more respectable. And the reason that is changing is that the JavaScript engines have gotten really fast. Really, really fast the last couple of years. And most of the browsers have become hardware accelerated, and that, of course, means that the speed of JavaScript doesn't matter as much in some use cases anymore. And we also have some great new technologies like the WebSockets and WebWorkers. And if we're looking ahead a bit, you know, for the games use case, the audio input and full screen issues are going to be solved, hopefully fairly soon. And if we just look a little bit further ahead, there's some cool stuff coming up. River Trail is a technology by Intel allowing you to, you know, use the SIMD instructions in JavaScript. WebCL is something similar. I'm really hoping we'll see that in the browser soon, which will, you know, make it even easier to write cool games. I wrote instead of NACL because I'm not a big fan of native client, but I don't work at Google. So here's a profile session I did of a game that I wrote called Emberwind. So this is profiled on, this is a native game profiled on the original iPad. And as you can see, it's using a bit of CPU when it's loading, but once it has actually loaded all the assets, it barely touches the CPU and it only uses the GPU. And this is a pretty common use case for, or a common scenario if you have a sort of casual game. You know, there's not much need for using the CPU heavily. So, you know, for some cases, writing games in JavaScript is, you know, is already fine. Of course, I have some friends working on some AAA titles, working at Digital Illusions, the Frostbite engine. So their use case is slightly different. You know, they want to squeeze every drop out of the hardware. So they always aim to saturate both the GPU and CPU. And just at GDC the other day, I heard someone say, we were only using about 80% performance, so we added Phong tessellation to squeeze the last drop out. So they're like really trying to get every bit of performance out of the hardware. So for those guys, you know, games in JavaScript may be a few years off, but it's definitely coming. So before I got here, I stepped through some source code in assembly to have a look at how close to the metal we are, like how much overhead is there for using WebGL. So unfortunately, we're not very close to the metal at all. You know, there is a lot of overhead as compared to just using OpenGL. There was about 450 instructions just to pass the parameters from JavaScript to the WebGL layer. And after that, there was even more to get it to the driver. So that is really our challenge as a browser vendor. You know, we need to keep spec conformant, but we also have to try to be performant. Luckily, though, it doesn't matter that much if there's a bit of overhead when you're just issuing hundreds of draw calls. And really, that's what you should be aiming for, just issuing hundreds of draw calls. So what about garbage collection? Yeah, it's true. That's bad. You know, a full mark and sweep can take up to 100 milliseconds. And that's not very cool for a game. So if you're actually aiming for, you know, 60 frames a second, you have 16 milliseconds to draw a frame. If the garbage collector, you know, suddenly stops and takes up 100 milliseconds, you drop a lot of frames. So that's definitely an issue. But there's two points that are important to note, though. And we are aware of it. There's a stress test written by someone at Google that really stresses out the garbage collector. And you know, we're working on improvements. All the browser vendors are doing that. The more important point to note, though, is that just because it's a garbage collected language doesn't mean you should be a dumbass when you're writing your applications. And you know, if you work on a AAA game studio and you went and allocated a big array of some lights, you know, in an inner loop and used that and then you deleted it, you know, you would be out on the street in no time at all. You have to check your memory usage, even if it's a garbage collected language. Okay, so Emberwind HTML5. So this is a game I wrote in my spare time, originally for Windows and OS X, and later ported to iOS. So it was a hobby project. It was just me and some freelance artists. And when I started at Opera, I think it was probably the first week, I had no clue about any web technology at all. So one of the lunch breaks, I sat down and I took some of the assets and I, you know, what can you actually do in the browser today? This was about 2 years ago. So I wrote this really quick 222-line JavaScript test on a lunch break. You know, it's got that little parallax scroll. It's a tiny level. Two little animating characters. So I thought that was, you know, really encouraging that someone with no knowledge of web technology, could write something that looks like a game, you know, in a lunch break. So much, much later, I think I had started working on WebGL. The VP of Opera Mobile walked up to me and said, wouldn't it be cool, you know, that little sample you wrote, if we made that into a full-blown demo, we could use to showcase, you know, the performance of Canvas 2D and WebGL. And I thought, well, that would be awesome. So we got three summer interns from Chalmers, that's a Swedish university. And these guys had no prior experience of JavaScript, but they picked it up really quickly. So we wanted to test what's currently available cross-browser, so that includes IE. And we wanted to make it 100% flash-free as well, because browser vendors hate flash. I'm sorry, Adobe, but we do. So why do we do this, a browser vendor? Well, it's incredibly valuable to us to try and create some content with our own technology. Much like, you know, a game developer would never license a game engine from a company that hasn't done a game with that engine. And, you know, it gives us a better idea of the current state of the browsers, not just our browser, but all the other ones. And it catches a lot of bugs early. And when I actually catch a WebGL bug, I go to fix it directly. It's a lot quicker than if someone out there sends me a bug report, you know, we have to go back and forth. And it also gives us a really good idea of what we should optimize. We have an internal bug tracking system at Opera, and there are just heaps and heaps of entries that is linking to the Emberwind game. You know, we need to optimize this, we need to fix that. So it's been really valuable to us. So as I said, cross-platform, we wanted it to run on all the major desktop browsers and all the mobile browsers. This was actually done before Firefox Mobile was released, so I haven't tested it on that, but it should run. And the TV, Opera TV browser. So it's time for a little demo of Emberwind. I'm going to go to windowed mode so I can open this in a new tab. Do I have a little bit of sound? Okay, you can see I've got some debug information in the corner because I'm running a debug version, so I can show you some stuff. Let's just skip past this. No one ever reads the intro anyway, right? Okay, so this is a cute little cartoony 2D platformer game. So you play this this gnome watchman flying around on your white snow owl. So the whole story is that there's an evil demon that and his minion gremlins have invaded the lands of the humans. So you need to walk around and smack them over the head with your cane. So the objective of the game is to actually find all the human houses and light the fireplaces. Because the gremlins are afraid of light, of course. So let me just get past a few of these. Sorry, so I'm following that green arrow. I'm just going to get up to the house to show you some stuff. Like that. A bit of story again. Okay. Yay, he's happy. Got four sisters. Okay, so once you've actually lit all the houses in the stage, you need to head back to your snow owl and you fly off to the next stage. There's boss battles, there's bonus levels, and you know, all sorts of stuff. And it's a cute little game. So, let me mute that. So, we had the original game already, so we knew exactly what the requirements were. So we could create a render interface that did just the bits that we needed to render this game. And then we backed that with two different backends, a Canvas 2D backend and a WebGL backend. And those backends are actually interchangeable at runtime, and it makes it really easy to compare the performance. So you can see up in the left corner it says WebGL, meaning it's currently running in WebGL. So I can switch to 2D Canvas just like that, and back again. So that was just really, really great to have. And it also means it runs on IE. So the Canvas 2D performed, you know, surprisingly well, but there were a couple of things that were really slow. It just doesn't have the flexibility of the shader that WebGL has. One of the examples are that little flashing arrow. To do that in Canvas 2D, you have to render it to an off-screen canvas, use the results of that, and then render that. So obviously that's going to be a lot slower. Another thing we worked quite a bit on was getting the audio to work across browsers. And you know, the audio tag was never designed to cope with the 350-something sound effects we had in Emberwind. And even if you could create, you know, 350 different audio tags and use that, what if you wanted to play the same sound twice? You know, you'd have to have even more audio tags or load them dynamically, which is just not going to work. So we ended up using a technique called sound sprites. And if you haven't heard about that, you just take all the sound effects, you concatenate them into a long wave file, you put a bit of silence in between just for good measures, and then you output some information of where you can find that sound and for how long you should play it. And we used an audio tag each. Let me bring that up. So you can see each one of those audio tags works as this audio, like a sound channel. And so at the bottom, there's a little red tick mark. I don't know if it shows on the screen, but so that's actually the position of the music currently playing. So if I jump, you can see that it allocates one of those channels, goes to the right position, and plays that sound, and then the sound channel is available again. When we did this, there were some issues with seeking within, you know, wave files in some of the browsers, but they've all been fixed now, so this works really well. You know, if you just have a simple game, you can use this technique today. You don't have to wait for an audio API. There's also a link to a sample that does just that. Of course, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed that we can actually agree on an audio API to have in all the browsers fairly soon. We don't have to do these tricks. Another thing we worked a bit on was draw call reduction. And let me show you in the game again. Here you can see the frame rate, 200 frames per second, drawing 86 draw calls. This is in Canvas 2D. If I switch to WebGL, you can see that it's still at 200 frames per second, but it drops to 34 draw calls. So that's interesting. How do we do that? If I push this, I can actually step through the draw calls one at a time. So this is in Canvas 2D. And you can see how it starts to build the world one draw call at a time, drawing a tile each. So obviously that's going to be, you know, a lot of draw calls. If I switch to WebGL and I do that again, you can see almost the entire level popped in at one draw call. And of course the reason we can do that is because we have these texture atlases containing, you know, all the little bits and pieces you need to be able to draw, in this example, an interior level. Okay, so that was it for the Emberwind demo. Shutting that down. So some of the lessons learned when we were doing this port. You know, it's really a breeze to port to JavaScript. These three interns had, you know, like I said, no prior experience with JavaScript, and they picked it up really quickly and did a great job with the game. You know, we could have used one of the automated tools that have popped up, like Mandrill or Emscripten, which are great alternatives, but, you know, C++ on one monitor and JavaScript on another is, you know, really easy. And, you know, when you're doing a port, it's pretty likely that you're going to have to change some of the stuff. So doing it in JavaScript is a good option. So the same optimizations as you do in regular game development applies to JavaScript game development, of course. You know, you have to optimize at the algorithm level before you dive into any details, of course. And reduce draw calls and state changes. That's really important, and I'm going to get back to that. And like I said, you have to keep an eye on memory usage, even if it seems like you're not using any memory. You know, you're just creating an object in JavaScript. But, you know, have a think about what it's actually doing behind the scenes. And wherever you can get away with it, you know, take shortcuts. And people from the demo scene, they're the masters of shortcuts. A lot of game developers come from the demo scene, and they really know how to cut corners to get performance out of the hardware. I don't know if these are good samples, but, you know, spheres are excellent collision primitives. Why would you want to use a full mesh to do collision? You know, spheres will do just fine. And, you know, if you have a character that is somewhere and you need him to walk on screen, you know, don't actually walk him off screen. Just teleport him to the edge of the screen and, you know, take it from there. Okay, getting back to reducing draw calls, because this is really important to get some decent performance. You should use texture atlases and batch your draw calls. If you're not from the games industry, if you're from the, if you're a web developer, you probably know it as CSS sprites. So to show you how to make texture atlases, I wrote a simple 200-line Python script. It uses a KD tree, which is a simple algorithm. And that script is open source and it's available on GitHub. So use it. Even if you're not writing games, you know, using texture atlases is going to improve your hardware performance a lot. So here's a sample of an image atlas. It's just all the images from a website that I pulled on and created an atlas from. And the tool actually builds an SVG animation as well that shows you how the algorithm operates. And it's pretty fun to watch. So I'm going to show you that. So as you can see, it takes all the largest, all the big images first and puts it into a KD tree, and then it goes to smaller and smaller, and eventually the result is going to be pretty darn good. Okay. So here's another example. You can, not only do you save on draw calls, you also save on texture space. So this is a character from the game called a brownie, a little character that in his idle animation, he just stands on the spot and jumps up and down. And you can see in the lower right corner, the animation sheet for that actually has a lot of empty space in it. And that's because, you know, there's a bit of movement in there. So if you put that through the texture atlas tool, it actually, not only does it pack it into an atlas, it removes empty space around the images. So here you can see the result of all those packed into a single atlas. That script also outputs some CSS. You can see I suck at CSS because it doesn't fit on the screen. But that CSS will, you know, make that div that you put this class on behave just as if it was the original image. And of course, it also outputs JSON if you want to use it in WebGL or Canvas or some other language. Okay, and here's the sample usage of that CSS. It's really simple. So it starts by you know, importing the style sheet. It's got a single div that it gives a class. I've put a border on here just so you can see that, you know, the div actually isn't moving. It's just the content that is changing. In the script tag, you get a reference to the div, and just 20 times a second, you change the class of that, and you have a little animating character. So this is actually going to be really good for performance. You know, you could potentially write a DOM renderer for a game, you know, using this technique, and it would be really fast. So why are texture atlases important? Okay, I've got a little performance test that I've written, and it takes 10,000 of those little brownies jumping up and down on, and it renders that first using separate images for all the animation frames, and then using an atlas for the animation. So let's run that and have a look. Okay, so it actually outputs the results down here. And you can see when I used a texture atlas, the canvas rendering only spent 77% of the time. So that's a fair improvement. You know, it's not as much as you'd expected. So let's try that in WebGL. So it's doing the same thing without an atlas and then with an atlas. Okay. That's more like it. So it actually is twice as fast as without using a texture atlas. So that's just some, you know, basics of hardware acceleration. You know, if you're using a texture atlas, you don't actually have to change the texture, you know, while you're rendering different things, and that's going to give you a lot of performance. And in fact, in WebGL, we only made a single draw call. You know, we built the buffer and rendered it once. So let's have a look at those numbers again. Does that actually mean that Canvas is faster than WebGL if you're not using a texture atlas? Yeah, it actually does, because we do some magic behind the scenes. So if you're using Canvas to render, we actually combine draw calls. So instead of the 10,000 that you would have seen for WebGL, Canvas only drew 580 draw calls. Okay, but you know, once you actually did the combining the draw calls yourself in WebGL, it performs a lot better than in Canvas. So with the texture atlas, we actually did about 10 draw calls in using Canvas 2D and only a single draw call using WebGL. So why was it 10 draw calls and not one draw call? Well, we've just put an arbitrary limit on how many draw calls we're actually combining. And currently that's set to 1,024, of course. Every programmer sets that limit. That's probably going to be tweaked later on, so eventually you'll see one draw call on Canvas and one draw call on WebGL. But you can actually do even better with WebGL. So to prove that, I wrote a really optimized test, WebGL test, does this. So let's have a look at that. Okay, that's a lot of brownies. So that's 2.5 seconds. It's the same as the Atlas test, only this time I drew 10 times as many brownies. So that's 100,000 brownies. So, you know, WebGL is a lot harder to get started with, and you're definitely on your own. You know, we don't optimize anything for you. We just provide the API, and you need to know how to use it. But if you actually do know how to use it, you know, you can get a lot of performance out of WebGL. So, like I said, WebGL is hard. I've made a pretty extensive training video called WebGL 101, and you can find that on YouTube, and you can find the samples on GitHub. So there's only one video called that, so you can just search for it and you'll find it. Like I said, it's pretty extensive. It's 2.5 hours long, so you're probably not going to sit through it all at once, but you know, it covers a lot of ground, and if you want to get started with WebGL without a library, that's a good start. There's some other WebGL resources as well. A colleague of mine, Luis Caballero, wrote an introduction to WebGL that's using WebGL libraries instead of, you know, doing it all yourself. And there's the Learning WebGL, of course, which is, you know, a WebGL adaptation of the classic NIHI OpenGL tutorials. And, you know, MDN has a whole collection of WebGL articles that are really good, so go check those out. Okay, so let's look at some real 3D stuff. You know, enough with the 2D. So I'm going to need a little bit of sound for this. Yep, I've got some sound. So, as you saw, that demo has, you know, animations and skinning and stitching as well, which is, you know, the fallback if you don't have that much computing power. It has animation LOD level of detail, so as the character goes further away, you can turn off animations in fingers and toes and stuff that won't show up anyway, just to save on some processing power. It has shadow maps, which are the dynamic shadows. It has light maps, which is the, you know, static ambient lighting. And it does normal maps, which, you know, gives you all the detail on the character. You can see all the little wrinkles in his suit. And it reads Collada source assets. I'm sad to say it's still a work in progress. I have a pre-processing script that mangles the assets a bit for me, but I'm working on getting it to load Collada assets directly. It also comes with a scene viewer. So let's see if I can open that character up quickly. So there's no light in this scene, that's why he's looking a bit flat. You know, I've got the ambient slider pulled up. So if I open the animation as well, you can see he's animating. You've got all the cameras, the top, the crotch camera, apparently, the side one. You know, you can turn off the meshes and just see the skeleton. And, you know, you can play around with the animation level of detail. So I don't know if you noticed, but the head just got stiff. So he's not turning his neck when you pull that up. All right. So that is all open source, and it's available on GitHub. If you want to start playing around with WebGL, go have a look at that. You know, if you want to rip it off, use it, feel free to do that. And of course, you know, Opera's motto has always been the best internet experience on any device. And we try to stay true to that, which means that we also have WebGL on devices. So this is Opera Mobile 12. It was released in February at the Mobile World Congress, and it runs a the mobile demo of this Odin project. It runs really smooth. So this is an image of the Asus Transformer Prime on my hotel bed. It runs 60, 70 frames a second. It looks really, really nice. So it doesn't look much like a mobile, but it also runs on my Galaxy Nexus phone. And of course, we have the Linux SDK, which is what we provide to TV manufacturers, and they use that to build the browsers in TVs. So this is a slightly older version of that demo from last year in September. This was released at IBC. And yeah, you can see 3D in the TVs, really exciting, being able to write some games and having them released on a TV, not something you connect to the TV. That's pretty cool. All right, that was actually quick. I don't have much more. Go check out Emberwind at GitHub. The source is there, free to use or do whatever you want with. The Texture Atlas tool as well. It's really useful to get some better performance. And, Odin, there's a live page of Odin that you can run directly from GitHub. And, yeah, I think that was it. Any questions? Do you want to walk up to the mic?
Hello. My question is if you've done any of this on mobile and what success you've had there.
Any of the...
HTML5, CSS, JavaScript for mobile, because a lot of what you're talking about is that it's getting more effective for desktop browsers because of processors there, but obviously there's a huge shortcoming now with processors and mobile.
Yeah. This is actually like the Texture Atlas stuff that I was talking about, for example. This is even more important on mobile phones, because they suffer even more from, doing too many draw calls. So this works really well on mobile phones as well. Yes?
Yeah, I'm curious. What are your thoughts with the CSS3 and whether or not you could build games using that animation framework? Or is the future for WebGL for building games in the browser?
Oh, bugger. I don't know anything about CSS. I suck so bad at CSS.
Because I know, the iPhone, for instance, it has hardware acceleration for WebKit animations using CSS3, animation.
Yeah. So, I think I mentioned earlier that, you could write a DOM renderer for, to get the hardware acceleration on iOS. And, that's great if you want to do that. You'll get the same hardware acceleration almost as you'll get in Canvas. And you should use the same techniques for, a DOM renderer. Use a Texture Atlas, and you can probably get great performance on iOS, using that. CSS3 specifics, I don't know. I know there's something going on with, getting shaders in CSS, but I don't know too much about that. I'm sorry.
Okay, and also, I'm curious, have you guys used anything like CoffeeScript or Node.js to help create development tools?
Sorry, I didn't
CoffeeScript? Have you heard of
CoffeeScript? CoffeeScript?
Yeah.
No.
No?
Okay. No, sorry, I'm not.
Okay. And then also, your Texture Atlas tool, that's all in Python, you said?
Yeah, it's written in Python.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi. I was wondering if you could recommend any resources besides the Nihi tutorials and besides your demos for learning more about shaders in WebGL?
Learning more about shaders. There's you can pretty much pick up any classical OpenGL book, the Red Book or something like that. But if you want online resources on shaders, I think. I don't know how good it is, but there's plenty of information at chronos.org, and shaders.
Finding an introductory tutorial on I guess how shaders work in the context of JavaScript is kind of difficult. So that's what I was curious.
Sorry, the concept of how shader work in...
In the context of JavaScript, like actually getting shaders into your WebGL-driven demonstration. It's hard to find somebody who's got a blog post or got a tutorial introduction on how to do that.
Okay. Well, go see my video.
Okay.
That'll help you.
All right, great. Thanks.
Hi. I can definitely appreciate, you know, all your time and effort into sharing your examples with us to help us learn. What happens when you need to translate this into an actual sellable product that now all of our code is exposed and we can't protect that? How does this technology allow us to not just give away something that we're trying to sell?
Sorry, I'm not catching all of that.
Sorry. How does this allow us, how does this open technology that's now just exposed in the browser, how do we turn around and sell that now that it can be just copied and reused by our competitors?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, that's the same issue that the gaming industry has been facing, you know, with the Pirate Bay and all that stuff. And I guess the gaming industry has shifted, like a few years ago, they really shifted towards subscription-based, like MMOs. Everyone wanted to do an MMO. And I think now it's shifting even more towards, you know, free to download, free to play, but you have in-app purchases. So I'm not a businessman, but I think that's probably the route you could go with making HTML5
games. What about even
games?
Stealing the code itself? Like, you know, how
the code itself? Okay,
yeah, the algorithms the time you spent optimizing.
There's people worried about that, but you know, if you obfuscate your JavaScript code, it's not much difference from, you know, looking at an executable. I can actually pop up, you know, an executable in a hex editor and make out bits and pieces of that. At least with some experience, you can do that. So it's not that different. Have you tried reading any of Google's code? You know, it's impossible. So I think that's good enough.
I was pretty much impressed by your Emberwind demo. I'm just wondering how you get audio working on iOS and Android.
Yeah.
Because
you don't.
It's a bit difficult, right?
Yeah, it is. It is really difficult. Yeah. No, I don't believe it did work on iOS devices. No. There was something I can't remember. You had to push to play or something like that, right? So yeah, let's hope for a audio API really soon.
And also, is the performance on iOS and Android any good? I mean, I've heard that Canvas is pretty slow on iPad and iPhone devices.
You mean our Canvas? Yeah, it's not performing awfully well. You know, with the iOS 5, it got a lot better, but. Yeah, let's really hope Apple starts enabling WebGL in their browser.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. I was curious what you used for collision detection when converting the games to JavaScript.
Yeah, so the original game had, you know, an implementation that I did myself. So we just ported that over to JavaScript. You know, ran into lots and lots of stuff getting undefined and multiplied with each other like you always do in JavaScript. But yeah, it was written from scratch by me. It's just a simple 2D collision, so it's not that hard to write, actually.
Huh. Did you play with Box 2D at all?
I have played with Box 2D,
like,
yeah.
The JavaScript port?
I've played some with the port, yeah. But, I mean, I don't think Box 2D existed when I wrote the original game, so... yeah, it's not that much work if you know your math.
Huh. Thanks.
Thanks. Is that it? Okay. Thank you all for coming.